Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
Ukrainians on the march, a swindler in the House of Commons, and the greatest of presidents has his memorial. It's May 1922.
100 years from today.
Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. The Allied Reparations Commission has informed the German government that it is willing to suspend reparations payments for the rest of 1922. It is a small comfort to a profoundly bitter and angry Germany. Berlin is mourning the loss of Upper Silesia to Poland by lowering flags outside the Reichstag to half-mast, even as they met to vote for ratification of Polish annexation of German territory. The members of Parliament wore funereal black. It was, writes the New York Times correspondent Cyril Brown, the blackest day in the Reichstag's history, and he warns that from it dates a new German eastward revanchism that could well have consequences for all of us. More new Polish territory. Eastern Galicia declared itself after the war to be the Western Ukrainian People's Republic. That did not sit well with Polish-majority cities such as Lvov and led to the Polish-Ukrainian War and Polish victory. Now, 25,000 Ukrainian Americans have marched through New York City to a rally in Madison Square Garden calling for an end to the Polish occupation of East Galicia. The Turks have been running wild and they have lost control, according to the government of Greece. Addressing the National Assembly, Foreign Minister Georgios Baltatsis said that Turkish troops have massacred hundreds of thousands of civilians in the districts of Amasya, Neo-Caesarea, Trebizond and elsewhere. He gave the number of dead to date as 303,238. The Vatican has signed a concordat with the government of Latvia, which will allow greater freedom for the Catholic Church in the country. However, every bishop the Vatican appoints in the Baltic state has to be a Latvian citizen, and the government has the right to veto any appointment. Back in Rome, things are rather chaotic. A general strike has been called in protest against the disorder in San Lorenzo. Thousands of pilgrims attending the Eucharistic Congress have had to walk to St. Peter's Basilica to hear Mass because all public transportation has been shut down. The League of Nations has received an objection to the British mandate in Palestine from Pope Pius XI. The objection is on religious grounds, based on the Roman Catholic Church's position that the creation of a Zionist homeland in the Holy Land gives unequal privileges to Jews. Few people promoted victory bonds as zealously as Horatio Bottomley in his capacity as editor of the patriotic British magazine John Bull, but it seems the Liberal MP was using the victory bonds money to fund his lavish lifestyle. The jury got a glimpse of that at his trial when, representing himself, he secured an agreement with prosecuting counsel for a 15-minute recess each day to enable Mr. Bottomley to drink a pint of champagne for medicinal purposes. Whatever it did for his constitution, it did nothing for his defence. The jury took just 27 minutes to find him guilty of all but one charge. Horatio Bottomley has gone from bonds to bondage. He will serve 7 years in prison. The Parliament of Southern Ireland, created by the Parliament at Westminster, has been a largely stillborn institution, with Sinn Féin members preferring to sit in their own so-called Irish Republican Parliament. Nevertheless, under the Anglo-Irish Agreement, a certain amount of finessing of the issue is underway to ensure that the Crown's political theory and the Republicans' political theory converge in time for the birth of the Irish Free State. So it is that Viscount Fitzalan, Lord Lieutenant of Ireland, has proclaimed the dissolution of the Parliament in Dublin. The alleged Republican second dial will also be dissolved in the next few days, and both will be replaced by a new provisional Parliament of the Irish Free State to be elected on June the 16th. One man who will not be in the new legislature is Joseph McGuinness. He was first elected to the House of Commons in the Longford South by-election in 1917 when he was in prison in England for his part in the Easter Rising. Michael Collins ran his successful campaign under the slogan "Put him in to get him out." He was re-elected in 1918 but chose not to take his seat and instead sat in the Revolutionary of the so-called Irish Republic. Mr. McGuinness is dead at 47, and his brother will stand instead in next month's election.
My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord, and he is triumphing on the vintage where the grapes of wrath are torn. He has loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible sweet sword. His truth is marching on.
For a decade, the magnificent Doric columns of a white marble shrine have been slowly rising on the western end of the Washington Mall, where once there was only a dank-fetid swamp. Designed by the architect Henry Bacon, the monument was halted by the World War and work only resumed after victory. But on Memorial Day, President Harding joined Chief Justice Taft and other dignitaries to dedicate the Lincoln Memorial. Blue and grey join was how the New York Times headlined it, and they did. The dwindling survivors of both sides mingling with veterans of the more recent war, with politicians, even with the newly arrived German ambassador, and with the late Commander-in-Chief's son, Robert Todd Lincoln. As part of the ceremony, the sculptor Daniel Chester French's large marble statue was unveiled to the public. It shows Abraham Lincoln seated in an armchair that itself sits on a high pedestal, projecting the great emancipator 30 feet into the sky. "None will dispute," said Mr. Harding, "that he was incomparably the greatest of our presidents." Mr. Harding has also signed into law the Narcotic Drugs Import and Export Act, the first federal law regulating the sale and transportation of opiates and other addictive drugs. It also creates a new law enforcement entity, the Federal Bureau of Narcotics.
Some sunny day, with a smile on my face, I'll go back to that place far away. That shack and that red-headed hen, she'll say, "How have you been?" Then go back to the hay and lay me my breakfast. On sunny day, I'll be on that express, flying away to my little bunch of happiness. Oh, how I pine for those lips, sweet as wine, they'll be pressed close to mine some sunny day.
That was Some Sunny Day in Wichita, Kansas, when the evangelist and faith healer Amy Semple McPherson arrived for a revival meeting. It was raining rather heavily, and Mrs. McPherson interrupted the speaker and then prayed for the rain to wait until, quote, after the message has been delivered to these hungry souls. The downpour ceased, and the Wichita Eagle has reported the event under the headline "Evangelists' Prayers Hold Big Rain Back." In Paraguay, President Eusebio Ayala didn't think anyone would mind him cancelling the presidential election. It turns out some people did. Eduardo Scherer, the former president, has approved an attack by Adolfo Chirife and some 1,700 troops to take control of the Paraguayan capital at Asunción. Germans are queuing up to see a new picture called Dr. Mabuse Der Spieler, directed by Fritz Lang and starring Rudolf Kleinroger in the title role. The story concerns a criminal mastermind who finances his schemes through gambling, but it is attracting as much attention for its insights into the dissolution of German society since the war. Berliner Illustrierte Zeitung hails the film as a, quote, attempt to create an image of our chaotic times, and says it will, quote, give people 50 or 100 years from now an idea of an age that they could hardly comprehend without such a document. The very fashionable and increasingly popular author F. Scott Fitzgerald has made quite a splash with his latest short story in the new issue of Collier's magazine. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button tells the story of a man who ages backwards. Do you like the French novelist Anatole France? The Catholic Church doesn't. Every single one of his works is now on the Vatican's Index Librorum Prohibitorum, the Church's official index of prohibited books.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and cracker jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the whole team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Take the federal government out of the ball game. In its decision in Federal Baseball Club versus National League, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled unanimously that American antitrust laws do not apply to the National League and the American League and their effective monopoly on organized baseball at the major and minor league level. The court's order, written by Mr. Justice Holmes, rules that the travel of teams from one state to another to play baseball is not interstate commerce and therefore cannot be regulated by the national government under the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause. Exhibitions of baseball, says Mr. Holmes, are purely state affairs.
Take me up to the ball game. Take me up with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and cracker jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the whole team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three, back, you're out at the old ball game.
Take him out of the ball game. Only 6 days after returning from a 5-week suspension, Babe Ruth has been ejected from a New York Yankees baseball game. The Yankees were playing the Washington Senators at the Polo Grounds when the star player was called out at second base while trying to stretch a single into a double. A furious Babe Ruth responded by throwing dirt in the face of the umpire, George Hildebrand, and was ordered off the field. On his way to the dugout, Ruth was heckled by a fan and immediately vaulted up on the roof of the dugout, plowed his way through a box and started up the aisle toward his tormentor. Babe Ruth will be suspended for one game and fined $200. Whene'er a cloud appears in the blue, look closely. It might be skywriting. Skywriting is writing in the sky made by an aeroplane using visible exhaust to form letters. It's been used a couple of times in flight exhibitions in the last few years, but not until now has it been used as an advertisement. As crowds gathered at Epsom Downs for the running of the Derby, an aeroplane flown by RAF Captain Legend Cyril Turner came low over the racetrack and spelt out the words Daily Mail to promote Lord Rothermere's popular daily newspaper. In case you're interested in more earthbound activities, the horse race was won by Captain Cuttle, a colt of fitful reliability, ridden by Steve Donohue. The Indianapolis 500 has been won by Jimmy Murphy, who set a new record for the race, averaging 94.484 miles per hour over 500 miles. He drove that distance in 5 hours, 17 minutes and 30.79 seconds and broke the existing record set in 1915 by Ralph De Palma by more than 16 minutes. Redgrave was a stage actor and a screen player in the nascent Australian picture industry who enlivened such fancies as robbery under arms. Mr. Redgrave is dead at 49, leaving behind a wife and family in England he has not seen in many years. They include a 14-year-old son, Michael, who is said to be interested in continuing the family acting tradition. Ernest Solvay was a Belgian chemist who developed the ammonia soda process for the manufacture of soda ash from brine and limestone. Soon after, he and his brother were operating factories in Germany, Austria, Great Britain, Russia, and America. He was twice elected to the Belgian Senate and made an honorary Minister of State by royal decree. Ernest Solvay is dead at 84. John Monroe Longyear was an American mining and timber company owner who developed coal fields in the Arctic Circle. The company town of Longyear City in Norway is the world's northernmost settlement with a population greater than 500. Mr. Longyear preferred to live in sultrier climes such as Michigan, where he built a stone mansion on the shores of Lake Superior. When the family decided to move to Massachusetts, Mrs. Longyear said she would miss their house, so he dismantled it and moved it 1,300 miles to Brookline for her. Mr. Longyear is dead at 72. Isaac Whiting was a Mormon cleric who led for 20 years the Cutlerite branch of the Church of Jesus Christ. He is dead at 79. Herbert Rowse Armstrong, a solicitor in the Welsh town of Hay-on-Wye, was arrested at the end of last year for allegedly attempting to poison a rival lawyer. In the course of their investigations, the police exhumed the body of Mr. Armstrong's late wife and discovered it to be riddled with arsenic. He was convicted of her murder and has gone to the gallows at Gloucester Prison. He is the first British solicitor ever to be hanged. Herbert Armstrong was 53. And that's the way of the world, May 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and O'Kill Media, all rights reserved.